Welcome to The Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today with Dr. Neil Nathan and Dr. Jacob Teitelbaum. Today, we'll attempt to sort out the good information from the bad and set the record straight on your good health. Healthcare and wellness issues can be so confusing these days with information constantly changing. Let us help you learn what you need to know. Now, here are your hosts, Dr. Neil Nathan with co-host Dr. Jacob Teitelbaum.
Welcome to our show, The Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today. I'm your host, Dr. Neil Nathan, joined by my good friend and co-host, Dr. Jacob Teitelbaum. I would like to thank our sponsors, Research Nutritionals, BioResource, Frequency Specific Microcurrent, Real Time Laboratories, and Natural Immunogenics for making this program possible. Since I personally use these products daily in my practice, as our program unfolds, I'll be mentioning some of them when appropriate. Now, we're live, so if you have questions during the broadcast, please call at 1-866-472-5792, or you can email me at neilnathan@earthlink.net. We now have our own Facebook page, The Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today, so please like us and share us. And we are answering questions that you can post to that page, so please check us out there as well. I'd like to remind you that you can download the Voice America mobile app, and you can find us on iTunes, Google Playtime, and Kindle, all for free. Now, without further ado, let me get to today's fabulous presentation, which will be on bioidentical hormones for women. And our guest today is my very, very dear friend, Carolyn Torkelson. Dr. Torkelson is an associate professor in the Department of Family Medicine at the University of Minnesota with a joint appointment in the Department of OBGYN and Women's Health. She's the medical director of integrative health at Women's Health Specialist Clinic. Dr. Torkelson is active in clinical research involving herbal and nutritional interventions and has authored a number of papers. She's currently completing a 5-year NIH-funded study on green tea and reduction of breast cancer health risk at the University of Minnesota. So I'm delighted to welcome Carolyn to our show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Fabulous. So Carolyn, why don't we jump in here? What we want to talk about today is a subject that is rife with controversy. There's all kinds of ways of thinking about this and doing it. But first of all, why would our listening audience want to know about bioidentical hormones? What symptoms would a woman who was deficient in these hormones have, or imbalanced might be a better word?
Well, when women present during that perimenopausal, menopausal, postmenopausal phase, they can come with just a plethora of different symptoms. Primarily, we see them presenting, however, with vasomotor symptoms, hot flashes, night sweats. All this then is a slippery slope, so it results in poor sleep, fatigue, difficulty with mood, accelerating anxiety. And oftentimes they're complaining about brain fog, memory changes. So these are some of the women who might be strong candidates for hormone therapy.
Right, and the list that I normally think about, also vaginal dryness and the change in sex drive or libido, are also big symptoms for many.
Absolutely. I think that is one area that, as practitioners, we often forget to talk to women about, and that's their sexual health. And what's exciting is that the use of bioidentical hormones can be used systemically, but also just topically, too, for women with vaginal dryness and dyspareunia.
Excellent. So these are very common symptoms. Perhaps the majority of women at some point will have them. And when they present, then we have the opportunity to help them.
Yes.
Just to share my bias with our listening audience, although there are some women who come to me going, well, this is a natural phase of life, and I'll just tough out my way through it. It's something I need to do. I don't share that view because from my perspective, a deficiency in any hormone which gives the body symptoms, is the body's way of trying to get our attention and going, please help me and take care of me. It's not trivial to have mood swings, to not be able to think clearly or focus or remember or sleep. These are not things that I think people should blow off or try to tough their way through. And that's my bias. Your thoughts?
Well, I agree with that. I think the question of using hormone therapy is frequently asked and discussed, but I also like to keep in mind that menopause is a life-changing process that requires an individual treatment plan and not one size fits all. Some women clearly need hormones, other are not candidates, and some women simply do not desire them. You know, I think there still remains a lot of fear around hormone therapy use. In 2002, there was a national scare when the Women's Health Initiative, this was a large randomized hormone therapy prevention study, was stopped abruptly because of an increased risk of breast cancer. You know, at that time, many women stopped the use of hormone therapy, but now, 12 years later, the results are better understood, and hormone therapy is again being discussed in women as a reasonable option. And that's kind of how I approach it.
Right. Okay, well, let me ask you a question.
Sure.
Because in my reading of the data, the Premarin, the synthetics, those kind of things certainly do increase the risk of breast cancer. But the estriol, things like bias, the bioidenticals, including the progesterone instead of progestins, do not seem to increase the cancer risk. And if anything, certainly decrease heart attack risk and other cardiovascular problems. They seem overall to keep people very young, very late in life relative to not doing anything. So I think it's an important distinction between the synthetics and pregnant horse urine, which most holistic doctors have been saying for 20, 30 years was insane to use, versus the bioidenticals. Mm-hmm. What's your take in terms of the cancer risk using bioidenticals?
I generally use bioidenticals from a theoretical basis because I just think, why not give the body back what is produced in the past? From a scientific perspective, though, I don't know that we have the data to say that we have had no head-to-head studies to know if one is safer than the other. But what's encouraging is that even with a women's health study that used Premarin, even that showed that the risk of breast cancer when starting women at that menopausal period was relatively low. And women who took estrogen alone, which was Premarin alone, actually did not have an increase in breast cancer risk. So this is, if we look at the data that came out from the 12 years later, and a really good JAMA article in October of 2013 showed that we should not be as scared as we thought we should be. And so that's what I try to explain to women, that although I use bioidenticals, nobody has done a head-to-head study against bioidenticals versus the pregnant mare urine.
Well, my understanding, Carolyn, correct me if I'm wrong, because we can bring the science in here too,
mm-hmm.
is that after the Premarin, it didn't come off the market, but there was a profound drop in the use of Premarin and Provera. Within a few years of that, the incidence of breast cancer dropped, my understanding was 18% to 20% less breast cancer, which kind of went along with some of the original findings of the study.
Yes, that we did see that drop. There's not a clear explanation for that. However, when we look at the data from the study, after 3 to 5 years, we do see a slight increased risk, but probably not enough to it's something that we want to discuss with women, but not a reason not to give women hormone therapy if they need it for quality of life. And again, I give the bioidenticals because it just makes more theoretical sense to me to do that.
Indeed. And Carolyn, let me offer a thought to listeners, too, that there are no head-on studies, and don't expect any, because
we
won't people motivated
any.
To pay for a study on the synthetics are not going to want to do it to the bioidenticals and vice versa. But that doesn't mean there's no research. There are dozens and dozens of studies looking at the relative safety of bioidenticals and then other studies looking separately at the risk and safety safety, if you want to call it that, of the synthetics. In fact, for those that are interested in my book, From Fatigued to Fantastic, I'm going to give a shameless plug. We have an article on that, and there are dozens and dozens of studies that I reference, actually about 85 studies, I think, that I reference on the safety of bioidenticals versus the synthetics. So I think that even though we don't have that head-on, large, massive kind of NIH-type study that we see, there are a lot of studies, both in vitro and in human beings, showing the bioidenticals to have a much better safety record. And, in fact, even some of the major cardiologists and the rest have also come out saying that the data is pretty clear, that these are safer and wondering why anybody would use anything else.
Well, let me synthesize a bit what we're saying. I think all three of us are saying that there is, for many women, great value in considering the use of hormones. All three of us are saying that the bioidentical, both theoretically and in my own experience, actually works much better, is better tolerated with much fewer side effects. And I would acknowledge that that might be controversial. So let's move on from this. We're going to go to a break in just a few minutes. But for right now, assuming that a woman has these symptoms and is interested in getting some help. Carolyn, how would you next start looking at that? Would you get some lab tests? How would you evaluate her need, and what would you consider giving her?
How I usually start out with is listening to the patient and hearing their story, finding out what's important to them and what their risks are. Then I will explain to them usually that I choose a bioidentical, which is my preference. I find that I get very good results with bioidenticals. Something that's confusing to women is when I speak about a bioidentical, they think it needs to come from a compounding pharmacy. And I also tell them, yes, you can get a bioidentical from a compounding pharmacy, but you can also get it from a commercially available pharmacy. And that's sometimes how I start, because I really like the use of a patch. I like the estradiol patch. I think it's a good way to make it available. It avoids first pass through the liver, and it also probably, in studies, shows that it decreases DVT risk. So I will usually start out with a commercially available patch at a dose of about 0.0375 or 0.05, along with a micronized progesterone that I usually give at night. This progesterone it is especially essential if someone has a uterus to prevent hyperplasia. But even if women have had a hysterectomy, from a balance perspective, I will often give a micronized progesterone.
Great.
What dose do you like to give, Carolyn?
In progesterone?
Yes.
I usually will start women out on 100 milligrams at night, and depending on how they respond, go from there. Some women really need a higher dose. Other women sometimes don't tolerate progesterone as well. They may get some mood shifts from it. So I know Neil had asked me before, do I do labs? Generally, I will do some baseline labs. Women prefer that. I don't usually follow hormones when I have people. I usually don't follow labs when I put people on hormones over time, but I'll get some baseline hormone tests that include, you know, your progesterone, your estradiol, your FSH, TSH, and clearly vitamin D.
Let's come back to that in a bit. First, I'd like to introduce one of our many sponsors for this program. That would be BioResource. And to try to key some of their products to this presentation, I'd like to mention that BioResource makes a product called Clifem, K-L-I-F-E-M, which is particularly helpful for hormone dysregulation, especially perimenopausal hot flashes. A typical dose of Clifem is 1/4 to 1/2 teaspoon twice daily. And in addition, it's very helpful for people using the BioResource products to look at a product called Apohepat, A-P-O-H-E-P-A-T, which is specifically helpful for helping the liver to work better, to function its job, because estrogen is, as is progesterone, metabolized in the liver, and it's a major organ that we want to work with. So with that, let's go to a break.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Dr. Nathan invites you to go to his website, neilnathanmd.com, for additional presentations and blogs. You can buy his new book, Healing is Possible, New Hope for Chronic Fatigue, Fibromyalgia, Persistent Pain, and Other Chronic Illnesses on Amazon, Kindle, and through all booksellers. Information about personal medical phone consultations or office visits is also available through the website, neilnathanmd.com, as well as at gordonmedical.com.
Every day we hear about health and nutrition, but it's also confusing. We think we're eating the foods that are good for us, like nuts and berries, and avoiding things that supposedly aren't, like gluten. Yet we still wind up craving poor foods, taking medications, sleeping poorly, and gaining more weight than ever. What could be underlying these health problems? Get the answers. Tune in to Nutritional Wellness Beyond Food with host Lori Hibbard, Wednesdays at 9 a.m. Pacific Time, noon Eastern Time, on Voice America Health and Wellness.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America.
You are listening to The Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today with Dr. Neil Nathan and Dr. Jacob Teitelbaum. If you have a question or comment for the show today, please call in to 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to neilnathan@earthlink.net. Now, back to The Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today.
Welcome back to our show, The Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today. I'm your host, Dr. Neil Nathan, joined by my friend and co-host, Dr. Jacob Teitelbaum. If you have any questions for us, we are live. You can call 1-866-472-5792 or email me at neilnathan@earthlink.net. Thank you for joining us. And if you've just joined us, we're talking about bioidentical hormones for women. And we've been talking about the various ways that we can evaluate whether a woman needs bioidentical hormones and the kinds of forms we can give it. A lot of answers to those questions. I'd like to throw in my two cents here as well, in that I am more fond of testing than I think Jacob and Carolyn are. And I didn't used to be. When I first started doing this work, I based a lot of my work around clinical symptoms and responses. And over the years, the test that I found particularly helpful was the Genova hormonal assay test, which I found unusually accurate in telling me where we were and what women seemed to need. And I often found that, for example, Jacob mentioned a product called Biest. Biest means bi 2 estrogens, and typically it refers to giving estradiol, which is the more active estrogen, and estriol, which is a less active estrogen. I mean, typically, and Carolyn can correct me if I'm not getting this right, when a an ovary is functioning properly in a woman in her prime, typically the body makes about 80% of the estrogen hormone is in the form of estriol, and about 10% is estradiol and 10% estrone. So when people started formulating bi-est or bioidentical hormones, they thought in the same terms. Let's not reinvent the wheel. Let's kind of do what Mother Nature was doing. And so bi-est consists of usually 20% of estradiol and 80% of estriol. But as Jacob is pointing out, when you use it in that kind of a hardline formulation, you sometimes don't quite get it right because women's needs vary, in my experience, enormously. So I increasingly find that I need to individualize which of the hormones I use, and I find testing helps me to do that. It tells me when I'm overshooting on my estriol, when I'm not giving enough estradiol, and I find a very good correlation between my testing and the kind of dosage that I want to give. And so I know this is controversial, so I welcome some other thoughts.
Well, Neil, let me ask you a question. Have you done the Geneva hormonal assay on women who, or seen the results of the assay, on women who are, say, 30 years old and feeling fine, so that we have an idea of what normal, healthy levels of each of these would be? And then have you seen what it takes in the dosing to approximate those in women who are menopausal?
Well, I've not done that because the women of that age tend to have no symptoms that would make me want to do this test, and I don't want to waste their money on a test that isn't going to give me information that I'm going to use. So the truth is, I don't have that information, no.
I'm betting we can get it from Geneva, and I would, because they're a very, very, very good company and a good lab, and I'm betting that they have that data, and it would be interesting. Because, again, my main question still comes, well, one of many questions, is what is the optimal dosing? We have things that have been used historically, but I don't know that we really have the data supporting using a 2/10 of a milligram bi-est dose, which I'll often use, versus the standard 2.5 milligram, 10 times as high. But looking at the assays, and these are urine assays or saliva?
This is blood.
A blood assay?
Yeah.
Okay. So it's a single timing. Is it peak trough, or how are you doing it, the timing?
Well, it depends on where the woman is. If she's postmenopausal, which is where a lot of my testing goes, it's any old time. In the perimenopausal time, we try to do it a couple of weeks after their last period.
Mm-hmm. So it would be interesting to see from Geneva if we can get what a 30- or 40-year-old woman's normal panel would be, and then to see how closely yours come with different dosing regimens.
Yeah, not to emphasize this, because I want to get back to Carolyn's thoughts on this. My opinion is really clinically based, meaning when women have not been happy with their prescription, and when I measure it and I adjust it based on that testing, the adjustment that I make tends to work very well, and that's where my bias comes from. It's purely practical, meaning not about theory at all. It's about this is what seems to work better. Carolyn, your experience with that?
Well, Neil, I would tend to agree with you. I think what you're talking about is those women who are not successful with kind of a more direct approach, like let's say the patch and Prometrium. So you then search and go and get a compounding product. Then you have to decide what dose you want to use. And it is a huge challenge. You know, I can start with an E2 of 0.25 and an E3 of 1 milligram, give it once or twice a day in a cream or troche form, and see how women do. Again, follow them. But if these women are not doing well, and some people fall outside of that, that is when Geneva assay testing might be helpful. And that's when I would look at considering something like that. But you are dealing with some of those really challenging cases where people have not responded to a pretty standard dosing.
Yeah, and that's true. It's good to separate that out because
yes,
patients that Jacob and I see tend to be sicker and require more, if I can use the word tweaking, whereas if you're working with a basically healthy group of women who are menopausal, they have way more options available to them of things they can treat.
Exactly. And I think that is an important distinction, because many people respond to standard treatment, but then there's people who fall through the cracks, and that's who you see. I also see them too, but they need a lot more time and a lot more testing.
Right. And so let's bring up
the ask in terms of cycling it. Are you usually going to, and at what different age, give it every day, or are you going to do the day 1 to 25 or other kind of cycling through the month?
It depends on where they are from their last menstrual period. One thing I want to avoid is people doing breaks, is doing bleeding when I start them on hormone therapy, because then that just gets complicated and you have to bring them back and you have to do endometrial biopsies and do other workup that probably isn't necessary, but you still have to do it. So if I have somebody that's really perimenopausal, I'll cycle them. Or maybe within the first 6 months, I will cycle them. But if they're beyond that, I will talk to them, and I will often not cycle them and just do regular estradiol and then the Prometrium on a daily basis.
Yeah, thank you. Neil?
I just want to say one more thing. Now, if somebody has trouble with that, if they find this doesn't work for them and they do better on a cyclic basis, I keep them there. I do a lot of perimenopausal progesterone only in women, and cycle them with progesterone in the last part of their cycle, because that is really beneficial for many women.
Now, I'm going to note that many of our listeners have fibromyalgia, and they often find that their symptoms are much worse around their menses, because the estrogen deficiency and progesterone deficiency are contributing to their symptoms throughout the month. And that's how you can tell that it is coming from those deficiencies, that the worst around the menses. So in those cases, I'm less likely to cycle, because I don't want people feeling like crap, basically, for 5 to 10 days a month, and I'm more likely to go with a steady every day kind of a thing.
I would agree. I also, a lot of the patients that are, a lot of the women I see are have fibromyalgia, and I completely agree that they would do better on a steady dose rather than cycling.
Well, the key to this, which we're all talking about, is individualizing our treatment. None of us are recommending any kind of everybody gets this or everybody gets that. Key to it is really listening to our patients and having them tell us what's happening and how they respond. I'd like to mention that the symptoms that we're looking at respond at different time frames to what we're giving them. And what I mean by that is when you first put a woman on bioidentical hormones, particularly estrogen, you may see a fairly quick response in terms of hot flashes, night sweats, and sleep. But cognitive changes, things like focus, memory, concentration, a little brain fog, might take several months to come around with. So it's important that our listeners understand that it's not a simple... taking these particular materials is not as simple as, you know, taking an Advil for a joint pain, and you can find relief in 30 minutes or not. This often involves weeks of monitoring and following and looking at how people are responding before we make shifts and changes.
And if I have time, just to comment, other supportive care is essential during this time. I mean, if we don't talk to women about weight management, exercise, diet-rich and cruciferous vegetables, being on their vitamin D and their essential fatty acids, stress reduction, these all complement the work of the hormone therapy.
Absolutely. I want to get, we're going to go to a break in a minute or two, but I'd like to come back to that right after the break so we can talk not only about those. I'd like to talk maybe about herbs, but also about other hormonal imbalances that we have to be addressing simultaneously. But first, let me mention yet another of our wonderful sponsors. I'd like to talk about Researched Nutritionals, which is a specialty immune energy and detox formulational company, which does a great deal of research on all of its products, and many of their products are things that we use regularly. For today's broadcast, I'd like to mention one of their products, which is Energy Multiplex. This is an adrenal support formulation, since we're about to talk about how important the adrenal gland is and balancing it with female hormones. With our patients usually on adrenal overdrive, Energy Multiplex does not include glandulars, but nutritionally supports the adrenal function and might be something people want to think about adding to their program. So that is Researched Nutritionals at researchednutritionals.com, 1-800-755-3402. A second sponsor that I'd like to mention at this time is Frequency Specific Microcurrent. The Frequency Specific Microcurrent device is a wonderful little device, which we've talked about previously on the show, which has the capacity in a non-drug way to balance hormones to a certain extent and also to help in the functioning of the liver to get it working just right. So frequencyspecific.com, please go to that website to find a practitioner near you who might be able to provide you with additional benefit. And with that, we'll go to a break.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Dr. Nathan invites you to go to his website, neilnathanmd.com, for additional presentations and blogs. You can buy his new book, Healing is Possible, New Hope for Chronic Fatigue, Fibromyalgia, Persistent Pain, and Other Chronic Illnesses on Amazon, Kindle, and through all booksellers. Information about personal medical phone consultations or office visits is also available through the website, neilnathanmd.com, as well as at gordonmedical.com.
Good childhood mental health is critically important. Early patterns of emotions and thinking shape children's behavior from preschool into the teen years and beyond. But understanding young kids can be a challenge. Tune in to Child Psych Central, Discover the Kid Brain with Dr. Beth Onofrack. Each week, we will reveal how brain function and child development drive young children's daily behavior. Listen every Thursday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. It's one of the best things that you can do as a parent.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You are listening to The Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today with Dr. Neil Nathan and Dr. Jacob Teitelbaum. If you have a question or comment for the show today, please call in to 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to neilnathan@earthlink.net. Now, back to The Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today.
Welcome back to our show, Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today. I'm your host, Dr. Neil Nathan, joined by my friend and co-host, Dr. Jacob Teitelbaum, and we are delighted to be joined by my friend, Dr. Carolyn Torkelson. And we've been talking about bioidentical hormones, but probably that's kind of limiting our discussion. We're really talking about hormone usage in its proper sense. Just before break, Dr. Torkelson was talking about being sure to think about using progesterone. I know that estrogen gets the lion's share of attention, but often progesterone is very important. It has a relaxational effect. It has profound effects in the body, and it's kind of like the stepchild hormone. One of my biggest concerns is that in women who've had hysterectomies, it has long been stated that they don't need progesterone because they don't have a uterus, because the only thing that progesterone does is help the uterine lining slough at the time of every menstrual period. And while that's true, progesterone does a lot of other things, and I think that even women who have had their uterus removed and ovaries removed often need progesterone in order to be back in balance.
Amen on that.
Yeah.
The progesterone is like the body's natural Valium. And when people are progesterone deficient, they're going to have trouble sleeping, and they're often going to have a lot of anxiety. And this whole thing, it serves so many other functions in the body that to say that if a woman had a hysterectomy, they don't need it, to me just is borders on insane. And especially in fibromyalgia as well, where the sleep is already so disturbed. If women are progesterone deficiency, have progesterone deficiency, good luck on getting and staying asleep. And not to mention, you know, you have the 1 out of 8 women, people with fibromyalgia have hyperventilation anxiety, and a significant part of that comes from the low progesterone, along with other causes as well, other hormonal issues.
Right. Carolyn, your thoughts?
I do agree. I think that progesterone has a place. And I will use it in people with fibro, people who are sleep-deprived, or wanting to get to sleep, and it is often essential. And as I mentioned before, I often use it perimenopausally when I see that dip in mood or exacerbation of anxiety just prior to the onset of the period, when I see migraines, other kinds of joint pain, I will use progesterone at that time.
Carolyn, let me ask you a question, because we see a lot of women who have migraines that are basically hormonally sensitive, and it's not that the hormones are causing, it's more the fluctuation in hormone levels seem to trigger the migraine. So we'll see women on the pill that as the pill wears off the next morning, women on the patch that 2 days before the patch is due to be changed and the reservoir is empty, we see they start to trigger. Mm-hmm. I've always associated that more with the estrogen, but you're feeling that the progesterone is a significant player.
Yeah, I think it's the difference between the two. So, there's no question that estrogen and migraines are clearly linked, and oftentimes with these people with migraines, they've tried various options in relationship to estrogen. It hasn't made a difference. And when I add that little bit of progesterone at the end of the cycle, it can be very positive for some women.
Hmm.
And it just seems like it balances out the estrogen in a healthier way. These are also women that I will do a progesterone progesterone level maybe at about day, depending on how long their cycle is, maybe at about day 25, 28, or 24 to 28, see what that level is in comparison to the estradiol. And sometimes that helps me make a decision. A lot of the patients I see remain reluctant to go on medication. And so I have to sometimes advocate that this is really what might be helpful, and a 3-6 month trial is reasonable.
Yeah, I think it's important for people to understand that these hormone deficiencies are really important. The brain, as well as the heart and the vaginal area, have estrogen receptors, meaning that there are tissues that are designed to respond to estrogen, and if they don't get it, and if it's deficient, then some of those areas can really create havoc in terms of symptoms. So it's really in the category for me of need. It's in the same way that if you had a thyroid deficiency, we wouldn't think about not providing thyroid replacement. But because estrogen has been so...
demonized.
Yeah, that's a lovely word. women have this, their fingers are crossed as you start talking about estrogen and going, well, I'm not doing that. And I wanted to emphasize that it's a need and should be looked at that way.
Indeed, I don't view it like giving a drug, which is something foreign to the body. I view it as simply replacing something that was there and that the body needs. And I consider it really a very personal thing. And for most women, if they feel like they really don't want to do it, and especially if they're feeling basically well, if they're feeling well and they don't want to do it, to me, I don't even talk any further about it. That's irrelevant. In the ones who are feeling very poorly and they don't want to do it, then I give more education, more information, and then most often they tend to be more comfortable with it. But Carolyn on Breaker, talking about the difference between bioidentical and natural, and making the good point that those two words don't mean the same thing. To me, I want something that's bioidentical. It doesn't matter if it was made in a lab or in a plant. I want it to be the exact same chemical or molecule that the body has always made. For many folks, they don't understand the distinction. Did you want to discuss that a bit?
Well, I guess the point I want to make is that women come in and they say, I want that natural hormone that's bioidentical and I say, what do you mean by that? Well, I don't want it synthesized. And I tell them that, you know, they're all hormones need to be synthesized, whether it's bioidentical or not. And we can't simply take a soy plant or a yam plant and put it on our skin and expect it to convert naturally into a progesterone or estrogen. So when we're giving you a bioidentical hormone, it still has been manipulated in a way and to become an estradiol or an estrone or an estriol. So that's the point I try to make to women, that just to clarify with them.
And it's an important point, because when women are looking at whether to get the patch from the pharmacy or whether to get the topical cream, in my mind, they are both bioidentical.
They are both, yes.
Is that the patch will have only one of the two hormones.
Right.
The other distinction is that the patch is going to get much better absorption, and it's also more likely to be covered by your insurance.
Exactly.
So there's pros and cons in both directions.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking forward to when the patches include the estriol, as they do now in Europe.
Yes.
And then there won't even be an issue or question.
I agree. That is one of the limiting factors about the patch, is that it only is an estradiol. And our hope is that it could, you know, eventually have both the E2 and the E3 in it. However, I still, for the most part, find pretty good results with that standard formula, but that is not everyone. And that's where I'll go with a compounding pharmacy.
Can I ask in terms of interpreting the blood levels? So you're saying about day 24 to 28 to progesterone, and I'll do an initial, the same thing you do, I'll do the initial levels, but then I monitor and adjust based on clinical response.
Yep.
And I suspect, Neil, that you probably do a better job than I do by adding in the rest of the information. But I'm still kind of an old-fashioned doc in that way, and I listen to the person. I say, okay, how's that working for you? And I adjust based on symptoms. What are the optimal progesterone levels that you like to see in a woman day 24 to 28?
Oh, boy. They're all over the place. They are all over the place. I guess it depends on if the person's, obviously if the person is perimenopausal, I don't have a good answer for you. What I will look is at the norms that my labs have, and if I see that it is low in the normal level, that's what I'll go by. And it's as simple as that, because we all know that progesterone levels will range dramatically from cycle to cycle.
Yeah, that's one of my problems with the blood levels.
I know it.
And that's why the FSHLH will be a little more meaningful to me. For listeners, I wanted to throw out two important pieces of information. One, when you go to the doctor and they check the blood test and they say it's normal, you need to know that the research shows that women begin to go estrogen and progesterone deficient for 5 to 12 years before the blood level starts to drop below the normal range or rise above the normal range, as the case may be, and your period stop. So you will have estrogen deficiency for 5 to 12 years before the tests and a lack of periods will be telling you. And again, the best way to tell, in my humble opinion, is vaginal dryness. Hot flashes a little bit, not very specific. But do you have symptoms of worse fatigue, headaches, brain fog, insomnia around your menses? I'm not talking anxiety, but these other symptoms that suggest estrogen deficiency. And a really important point is, even if you're 20 years old, if you have had a hysterectomy, even if your ovaries are left in place, work by Dr. Philip Searle, who used to be at Yale, has shown that most women, after about 2 years of the hysterectomy, even if the ovaries are left in, will start to develop estrogen and progesterone deficiency, theoretically because of a disruption of the blood flow that impacts the ovaries. So we'll often see women who are 25 years old. It's sad. I see many women have a hysterectomy. It's more likely if they've had a sexual abuse history. It's as if their psyche is trying to do a clean sweep of what's going on there, and they'll have a hysterectomy. And then all of a sudden they have the estrogen of a 50 or 60-year-old woman because they don't know that even with the ovaries in, it will go low. So if this applies to you, keep that in mind. And you may find that getting, and I think the bioidentical hormones can make a major difference in your quality of life.
I think we'll come back to that point in a bit. I wanted to still mention to our listening audience two more of our excellent sponsors. The first that I'd like to bring up is Real Time Laboratories. Real Time Laboratories, the folks that have developed what I consider to be the most accurate and useful test for measuring mold toxicity. And if you ask what does mold toxicity have to do with female hormones, the answer is mold toxicity specifically prevents the pituitary glands from regulating those hormones. So we do see a higher incidence of that with mold toxicity. So again, to look at that, I encourage people to look at the real-time laboratories. Go to realtimelab.com, 1-855-692-6767. And our other wonderful sponsor is Natural Immunogenics. These are the folks that make hydrosol silver. Often people think of this as colloidal silver. These are particularly helpful for all kinds of infections, including viral, bacterial, flu season. Absolutely keep this one in mind. So this is Natural Immunogenics at natural-immunogenics.com, 888-328-8840, and we'll take another break.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Dr. Nathan invites you to go to his website, neilnathanmd.com, for additional presentations and blogs. You can buy his new book, Healing is Possible, New Hope for Chronic Fatigue, Fibromyalgia, Persistent Pain, and Other Chronic Illnesses on Amazon, Kindle, and through all booksellers. Information about personal medical phone consultations or office visits is also available through the website, neilnathanmd.com, as well as at gordonmedical.com.
Ayurveda and yoga are ancient sciences to achieve complete health of body, mind, and spirit. But there are many misconceptions about them. By making the science of life a way of life, managing health and preventing disease becomes second nature. Tune in to According to Ayurveda and Yoga with host Ann Holiday. Ann is an Ayurvedic professional and world traveler. She will show you how to apply the principles of holistic medicine to modern living. Join the conversation with her and well-known guests in the field of Ayurveda and yoga. Tune in every Tuesday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time on Voice America Health and Wellness.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You are listening to The Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today with Dr. Neil Nathan and Dr. Jacob Teitelbaum. If you have a question or comment for the show today, please call in to 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to neilnathan at earthlink.net. Now, back to The Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today.
Welcome back to our show, Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today. I'm your host, Dr. Neil Nathan, joined by my friend and co-host, Dr. Jacob Teitelbaum, and joined by my friend and guest, Dr. Carolyn Torkelson. We've been talking about bioidentical or hormone replacement for women in general, covering a great deal of ground. As we introduce our last segment, I wanted to comment that I hope I'm not giving the impression, or we're not, that all women who go through menopause need bioidentical hormones or any hormone replacement. This is a very individual process. I want to emphasize that it's only when necessary. There are a significant percentage of women absolutely don't need any, and so there's no reason to even think about it or give it for them. So in rounding out this discussion, I wanted to emphasize the third hormone that we really want to be thinking about in female hormones, and that's testosterone. Often that one doesn't get a lot of attention. But Carolyn, can you tell us about the importance of testosterone and looking at that and including that in our treatment planning?
Well, in my practice, the use of testosterone is somewhat limited, but I do use it. As you well know, and listeners should know, it is not FDA approved for women, so it needs to be come from a compounding pharmacy. I find that women who present with low libido and are looking for some help, I first start them on estrogen and progesterone. If they still are struggling, I will start them on a topical estrogen cream. And this is the one time when I do check levels. So I will do baseline testosterone total and free. And then after they've been on it, after 3 to 6 months, if they feel improvement on testosterone, I will check levels and make sure that nothing is way sky high.
Yes, I'm cautious about testosterone, and I tend to use what I would consider to be very low doses.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, that would be typically 2.5 to 5 milligrams, never more than that.
And I use 1/2 milligram to 1 milligram, even a lower dosing. But the research has shown that it will decrease pain in women with fibromyalgia to give them the testosterone topically.
Right, but I base my usage largely, as Carolyn is emphasizing, on blood levels. If I have someone where I can document that they have a very low testosterone level, I feel much more comfortable providing it and then seeing how they respond clinically to it. It's not only for libido or for sex drive.
Right.
It is also for stamina, for energy, for cognitive improvement. I mean, there's a lot of functions that testosterone has that... often things are known for what they're famous for, but there's more going on with that.
Are you giving it oral or topical?
I give all of my hormones by capsule, and I know that there are many people who use it primarily topically. If it is primarily for libido, I will use it topically vaginally, and I find it more effective that way. But when I'm using it systemically, I will use it as a capsule in which I also put my bioidentical hormone and progesterone. I find that convenient, and I've used it that way for many, many years, and I find it works well.
So you don't worry about the liver first pass issues?
Well, the use of the various micronized forms has made it more doable that way. I don't, and I've not had any trouble with it, and I would guess that I've treated at least 10,000 women with hormone in that form.
I'm going to note that one of the issues we see with the topical is sometimes women stop absorbing it. Same with men and testosterone. I tend to use a vaginal as the preferred form. Women find they get a very good response with that. They don't seem to lose the absorption. The oral certainly would be more convenient for people.
Let me emphasize, too, as we're talking about different hormones, that none of these hormones exist in a vacuum. It's not a matter of just looking at a number on a piece of paper on a lab slip. It has to be in the context of that woman's experience. And it's very important that we look at thyroid and adrenal function at the same time, because they are intricately interwoven in terms of how the body uses them. Carolyn, your thoughts on that?
I think that I would just absolutely agree that it does. Not one of these hormones exist in a vacuum, and that's where I will do some testing and adrenal function testing. I think back to testosterone a little bit. Again, I use low dose. I usually use topical. Sometimes I do put it in a capsule if I'm if I've found success with using it, and I'll put it in with the compounded estrogen biased and progesterone and a little bit of testosterone. I have not run into any trouble with using it that way. I have to say, I never know who's going to respond to testosterone. And usually what I'll hear from women on testosterone is that not only improving libido, but generally just feeling better.
Mm-hmm.
Just having better strength, having better stamina.
Again, that's excellent, because this whole interwoven process is really what we're all talking about. Really listening to our patient, really paying attention to what they're saying, and trying to look at it in the most comprehensive way that we possibly can. Carolyn, I so much appreciate your being on the program today. I think you've brought a wealth of information to our listeners, and I'm very, very happy we've been able to provide that for it. For all of our listeners, I'd like you to know that next week we have an unusual and very interesting program. We're going to be joined by Dr. Joel Friedman, who is from Maui, just an island over from where Jacob is. And we're going to talk about native healing practices. Working on the kahuna practices in Hawaii, but also included native practices elsewhere, as we talk about basic concepts of spiritual healing that are taught to us from those perspectives. Should be a very interesting
show. We're going to take a shot of tequila or rum every time the word natural is said on the show, and we'll be live from Hawaii.
Well, please join us for that show. Carolyn, again, thank you so much for joining us, and for all of you, thank you for listening, and be well.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you again for joining us for The Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today. Please join Dr. Neil Nathan and co-host Dr. Jacob Teitelbaum again next Friday afternoon at 5 p.m. Eastern Time and 2 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. And this week, apply what you've learned today to enjoy better health.